for those in the audience that might not be familiar with Wazoku and you know what the overall mission and vision is, would you mind telling us a little bit more about Wazoku? Well, first, is there a meaning behind the word Wazoku, right? And then we can jump into the overall mission.
Amazing. So it's great, first of all, to like get an opportunity to share with you guys, right? And to talk a bit about the background to the business. So there is a meaning behind Wazoku. You want to guess what language it is? Do you know? It's from a language.
British?
Yeah. We do talk a lot of gibberish, that's right. No, it's a Swahili word, actually, or it's a concatenation of two Swahili words.
Really?
Wazo and Kua, and that means great idea, basically, in Swahili. I also recently learned, and we tried to do this when naming the business, like, you know, does it mean anything terrible in another language? You know, one of those PR disasters that, you know, means something awful. And apparently in Japanese, it means something like wise crowd or wise family, which is a pure accident, but a nice pure accident, right? From our perspective.
That's awesome. Well, it's perfectly fitting into the mission and vision of Wazoku. Would you mind sharing with us, you know, what that is and what falls under your responsibilities day to day?
Yeah, sure. So who am I, right? I'm Simon Hill. I'm the CEO and founder of Wazoku. Probably kind of the, you know, in my role as CEO, not just in building and running a business, but really the kind of dreamer and the ambassador for building a product and building a platform within a space that we're building as well, right? It's we're a software company that believes fundamentally in the intrinsic power of people plus technology, so humans supported by technology to solve any problem, right? And our mission is to change the world one idea at a time, but really we're here to figure out the best way to connect the global world of problems with the global world of talent to create these incredible opportunities that are just round the corner, right? And how do you most seamlessly connect the dots between people, ideas, and problems to drive positive transformation and positive impact in the world?
Can you talk a little bit about the role of the solvers in the community? Talk about your solvers that you have. What sort of problems are they really like? How many people are they? What do they look like? Where they come from?
So I'm gonna try and be as concrete and sort of not esoteric as I can through this conversation. But sometimes I think you do have to step back into a slightly more, you know, philosophical outlook on life, right? So first of all, solvers, right? You use a piece of language there, and so we have a part of our proposition is this two-sided marketplace. On the one side, there are global companies, Fortune 2000 businesses, government departments, NGOs, others who are trying to solve a myriad of different innovation challenges, right? Whatever they might be. I'm trying to find a molecule to make this drug that can save lives. I'm trying to create an algorithm that can help me to predict X, Y, or Z, or whatever it might be, right? There's a whole range of different pieces of that. The other side of the marketplace is this global world of talent who want to work on interesting innovation challenges. Those might be students who are, you know, doing research degrees or computer science degrees or similar. They may be philanthropists and small business owners who are looking to get engaged in interesting projects, or a whole world of innovators, tinkerers, backyard scientists, and others who just enjoy getting involved in real world problems and seeing whether they can have that positive impact. So the size of the crowd is global, really, right? Like it's you know, there's about 500,000 people registered on my platform, but our reach is the whole world, right? It's then who wants to come and play in our playground and who wants to work on these problems, and that's a select audience, because there's no guarantee that you're going to get anything back other than an amazing ride, an amazing opportunity to work on something real and concrete. Like, these are real problems that real businesses are looking to really solve. But if you are successful and you can help them to solve these quite, you know, complex challenges, then we pay awards to people, anything from a few thousand dollars up to $1 million of award for helping these, you know, these organizations to solve those innovation challenges. But the reason I think this is sort of a philosophical question is that those people can come from anywhere, right? Like they literally from anywhere on planet Earth, but also they can be people who work inside your organization that have left work, gone home, registered for innovation, registered for our platform. It's incentive.com is the website, and become a solver on our platform. And so there's a real philosophical crossover between what is a worker, what is an open innovation solver, what is, right? And I think that we're trying to take people on a bit of a mindset to think that your innovation crowd can be drawn from anywhere, right? It could be the guy sat next to you at your desk. It could be a person you would never ever go and talk to and probably never will talk to again, who unlocks that key to that bit of magic for you. And you shouldn't care, right? That's the main bit, because what you're looking for is that co-created solution to the problem you were trying to solve. And you shouldn't care whether that person is in the external crowd, but part of your workforce either, because it's about problem solving at scale.
So I have a few questions here, and Brian, you can also ask questions. But the first one that came to mind was, why is innovation important, especially for an organization? And second, how do you foster that innovation within that organization, especially when they have especially nowadays that they might have a distributed team worldwide, right? How do you do that? What are some of the challenges, and why should we care about innovation and fostering that culture?
So I think first of all, right, one of the things I'd probably want to do, even though we talk about being an innovation platform and a open innovation company, is steer clear of the word innovation, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's a deeply pejorative term that has a meaning, positive or negative, for a whole bunch of people, and instead encourage us to try and fall in love with problem solving, right? So how can we, as individuals, as teams, as organizations, fall in love with problem solving and creating opportunities once we've solved those problems? And if you think about it in terms of that, then an innovation in my world is, if we do use that term, is an extraordinarily broad definition of what is innovation as a term, right? I talk about everything about exploitative innovation, right, in the bottom left-hand corner of that sort of general grid of change, right? Fixing the things that are all wrong with the amazing things that we do today, but we know we do them imperfectly. Some call that incremental change or whatever, right? All the way through to sort of, the Horizon 3 fully transformational stuff. And everything in between, right? So between exploits and explore, between known and unknown, every piece of that puzzle needs to be connected together. Whether those are small ideas for change, whether they're startups that have not yet been invented, startups that you invested in, that you put in your labs, whether they're ideas that came through your R&D team, through your external network or ecosystem, or from the global crowd, we need to capture that all in one single central place, to make sure that we're constantly learning and mining from it, and that when we need it, we can surface that information to, again, do that thing I spoke about earlier, right? Seamlessly connect people, ideas, and problems together, right? It's just good knowledge management in some ways, but that's probably as boring as the word innovation at this point in time, right? And so you gotta wrap it up. And that's why this whole piece of how do we help you fall in love with problem solving? Because there is not a person in any organization who doesn't walk into a job every day and is either given a problem to solve or has a great idea that could solve that problem, right? And that in any department, right? Even the bits of the business that don't get the love of the innovation teams, the audit teams, the procurement teams, the finance teams, whatever it might be, are facing all kinds of challenges to do their job in a digital world, in a distributed world, in a hybrid world, whatever that might look like, right? With the threats of cyber and God knows what else coming at them from different angles. And so change, risk, opportunity, problems, like let's create them as that, to solutions is a never-ending to-do list on this side, and never going to have enough capacity on this side unless you find new ways of working, new ways of tackling those problems, more scalable ways of tackling those problems, and more scalable ways of accessing talent who are very willing to help you to tackle those problems as well.
I think that's an interesting perspective, Simon, that you talk about how leveraging internal teams also adds an element of relevance that a lot of people may not feel in their jobs. They might not be as connected to the business in a lot of ways, but being able to participate in these challenges, the person who maybe works in the janitorial may have a great idea for the facilities department, harvesting those ideas and giving them an opportunity to showcase their skills I think is super interesting. What percent of the solvers, people who successfully, you know, resolve a problem, do they get hired by the end companies from time to time? I think there's a great element of meritocracy to that.
Yeah, there's a huge element of meritocracy. And I think, you know, Brian, you and I have in various calls and through various, you know, folks that we have in common, spoken about, you know, how do you better credential people for the things that they're doing in this space, right? You know, working on an open innovation challenge, whether you are successful or not, is an extremely, you know, it's not a generalist skill, right? It's a specialist thing, right? I would encourage anyone to go give their hand to it, right? It's like, it's an interesting piece. And the things that come back from people on these topics, and again, you know, go to innocentive.com, look at the challenges, they're all public, right? They're there, you can see the types of things that we are trying to solve for. Don't result in, you know, one page submissions or, you know, 40 character tweets back to the business, right? These are comprehensive pieces of work that come back that, you know, often have some level of prototyping or algorithmic development or deep research against them as they've gone forward, right? So there's a real skill and a real discipline behind all of this. The honest answer is, though, you know, and the internal world is a world where Wasoku began. The external world for me is, you know, I'm only a few years into really understanding and the answer to that journey. So Innocentive is a 20-year-old pioneer in the space, but, you know, I'm not the pioneer. I'm the founder of Wasoku, but I'm not the pioneer of that business, right? And so to a certain degree, I'm still learning it. And it was 20 years possibly too early in its own incarnation as an organization as well. I wasn't really focused on that bit. We weren't talking about open talent back in 1999, 2020, right? We weren't thinking about the distributed world of workers and the shift. Quite frankly, in the UK, entrepreneurship wasn't even a recognized career, let alone open talent, right? Being a recognized career. And so we've come a long way in not a long period of time, but it definitely happens, right? And I think that increasingly, I'm seeing this convergence. As I've said, right, there's this convergence between people, ideas, and problems. There's also a convergence between open innovation and open talent, and open talent and the attraction of talent to an organization, whether that's for doing work as an employee or doing more kind of on-demand gig economy types, but talent economy type work as well. Some of my solvers don't necessarily need to work after they solve, right? I just had a 19-year-old student and, you know, somewhere just south of $500,000 for helping to solve a really complex problem that he did because his university shut during COVID, right? He didn't have a thing to work on, wanted to keep his hand in the game of what he was interested in researching, did this and solved a really complicated challenge that, you know, if he wants a job, it's probably there for him, but, you know, he's just earned himself a lot of money that, you know, not many students would make in their spare time, right? So
I never made that kind of money in college, that's for sure.
I know.
I like this idea though of almost like an alternative source of finding talent, right? Someone that has taken a stab at this challenge and maybe from the organization looking to find talent, this could be a great avenue in a world where, you know, resumes look very similar, right? Like if you stumble upon someone that has worked on this big challenge, I will be like interested in talking to this person and just getting to know their thought process, right? Because that's ultimately what you're after, is what is this person's thought process as it relates to problem solving, right? Because that's essentially a job is problem solving, right? Challenge, right? So yeah,
what I love about applications like, you know, Innocentive and Wasoku and what Simon is building, I love the fact that it allows the person who might not have the Harvard degree, mm-hmm. might not have the technical know-how that comes from an educational background or a certification, but through his own willingness to learn or to have an idea, can compete with the most sophisticated scientists in the world and sometimes win. And I love those stories of the 19-year-old engineering student who solves a problem that couldn't be solved by, you know, the entire R&D department of a given multinational. And I think that is absolutely one of the things that is the killer app. Mm-hmm. In the face of all of these things, that people are more than resumes, and you're never going to get past you're hiring talent, hiring chomp crunches if you keep hiring the same sorts of people, the same sorts of ways. And so that to me, I think is such a massive opportunity for real transformative change with applications like Wasoku. So that's what I'm excited to explore for sure.
You've got to, I think the other piece of this is that, you know, not everybody's looking for a job, right? For whatever reason. And it could be because they've done that part of their career, but they want to still, you know, keep their brain switched on and want to still have impact, right? And so they're doing it for other reasons. And I believe there's, you know, as a general populace, we retire earlier and earlier in parts of the world. And we, you know, we don't need to turn that amazing talent pool off. And it's hugely untapped, right? So you've got kind of two core ends of the economy. You've got the emerging talent down here who are looking to increasingly differentiate themselves. Yes, maybe make some amazing money during college, but I think also, you know, work on real world problems with real impact, build their resume up in a different way, because everybody in, you know, in that goes to sort of Ivy League schools now has got degrees, they've got work experience, they've got all these things. So how can I do different things, right? How can I showcase my talents in different ways? And employers are looking to showcase their, you know, their approach to innovation, their open cultures, which may or may not be true, but at least they're trying to showcase them in a way differently to that prospective talent as well. So on the one side, you've got this, right, this emerging talent and the ability to connect brands differently to people and problems differently to different audiences that are hugely powerful. And I think that open innovation is also a tool for recruitment in many ways. And at the latter end of your career, you've got an ability to tap into this hugely, vastly experienced pool of people who aren't looking for work. You don't have that complexity of having to hire them, right? You know, put them on a salary and give them all the extra complexity that comes with having people on your payroll and having to look after them and all these other considerations, right? You've just got a willing person with an incredible amount of a brain and experience behind them, willing to work on your problem, whatever that might be, right? And that's purely at their own risk, remember, as well, right? Like they're doing it on their time, and you only pay if you're successful. Like where else does that model work? And has it worked so effectively that over 80% of these challenges get solved, right? I mean, that's kind of mind blowing.
You know, that leads to another. I'm so sorry, Cesar, another question.
No, that's amazing. My question or comment was around, I'm curious about the challenges themselves, right? Like, how do you decide? How do you pick them? All that, but Brian, what?
No, it's along the same lines. I think that the big thing that is an art that I think is interesting about Wasoku and Ocentive is the way they break down problems. Mm-hmm. And I think that when my experience, organizations have a harder time asking, knowing what question to ask, as opposed to, you know, and how to phrase, you know, create a problem or articulate a problem for someone else to solve. That's and kind of a secret superpower that I think is really necessary for these companies to succeed. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, Simon, about how you break down problems.
Yeah,
I'm happy to do so. And I think that actually that is the fundamental piece of all of this, right? So we have an approach we call challenge-driven innovation. It's not, you know, it's pretty much what it says on the tin, right? It starts with really trying to understand and break down that problem into its component parts, right? It takes an agile approach to problem solving. But it tries to somewhat, where possible, abstract the problem away from itself. Often we can get lost in technicality, right? So in our research teams, in our innovation teams, quite frankly, in anything we do, when we start asking questions, we either don't understand what we're talking about at all, so we just confuse everybody because we've not really understood the problem, full stop, right? We're just trying desperately, we're floundering in the dark, trying to reach for a solution before we've even manage to understand the problem that we're solving for, or it's such a level of technical domain expertise that you're effectively talking another language. And unless you happen to be that domain expert, that you don't know what's going on, right? You can't access it. And quite commonly, the solution lies just outside the field of vision of that domain expert, right? So you need to look in a parallel place. Right? We've got many examples of sort of uncovering things that we were looking in this pot for, right? We're looking in the molecular biology pot when actually over here in another area, in another part of life, there's a similar solution to that problem. It's just called something else because of the, you know, the nature of human language, the nature of specialisms and whatever else it might be, right? There was an amazing example with the Exxon Valdez oil spill many, many years ago, right? And there's like, there's all this oil up in destroying beautiful natural landscapes, and all these amazing people working on trying to get that oil out of the frozen landscape, and 15 years of money and time and energy and loss of ecosystem and everything else, and they still can't really figure out how to get oil out of frozen waters. And so we ran an open innovation call, but phrased it differently, right? We weren't looking for a mechanism of getting oil out of frozen waters. We were trying to find a way instead to prevent viscous shear. How do I stop this thing freezing so that I can get it out? And a person whose career had taken them in one direction was thrown back to a summer job that they had working on a building site, and they remembered those little vibrating rods that you have that stop cement from setting, right? It's a simple tool. Put it in thinking nothing more about it, right? Like this, I remember this from my teenage years working on a building site. No one had thought of it, right? And so they ran this thing, and they just vibrated inside these huge tankers that they used to pull up all of this stuff, stop the ice, stop the oil from freezing in the ice, and we're able to get all of the oil out of it 15 years down the line, right? Like simple challenge, but by asking a different type of question it enfranchised a different audience who came with different ideas to a problem that had eluded people for almost two decades. And there are hundreds of these, right? You know, this is part of the challenge. And I think that skill though of like, how do we ask good questions without trying to lead the witness to a solution, right? We as smart, educated people like to reach for solutions too quickly. And so we got to take the time, right, to really think about the problem, think about the question we're asking, and then find the best way of gathering the broadest set of solutions with the fundamental belief that we've probably solved many of life's problems, right? If we could just find a way of asking the question right, we've probably solved a lot of those issues somewhere else. I just helped a global pharmaceutical company to come to an understanding of why a brand new drug was having a specific impact in the market. The answer came from a solver who had no domain expertise really in that area, admitted it was probably the furthest away from their experience and in a sense of challenge they've ever had. And they've been doing this thing for years as an inoffensive solver, and found a piece of research that was 50 years old in a drawer in Mexico effectively, right? And so like that he had didn't really understand even what he found, I don't think, but uncovered the answer to something, right? That 50 years ago had been a piece of research that was still looking for its problem. And then the problem had to go find that thing 50 years later, right? Like we know these answers. You just got to find the right way of tapping into the right people who might happen to be in the right place, who might happen to have the right appetite to turn the right stone to find the right answer, right? And I think that machines and technology can do a great job of that, and we do as a company, but so can the collective intelligence of brilliant people, right? And I think that's that intrinsic piece of this is cannot be lost, right? That's got to be a key part of it.
The next question I have is kind of more of a philosophical one. So pardon me if I want to get too into the philosophical realm, but you know, Simon, as someone who really traffics in ideas and problem solving, where do ideas come from?
I love it.
Where do ideas come from? What is that source?
I mean, that's that. Yeah, we are getting a bit philosophical there, aren't we?
I love it.
So look, I think let me put this up another way. Right? I one of my pet hates is if I walk into and I've heard many a CEO tell me this, right? Is like, you know, if we don't like most of my people are not that creative, right? You know, they do these jobs, right? And that's what they do. And if I have some creative people over there, but I'll bring in external people. And you know, it's simply not true, right? What I would typically say to those people is go and observe those people in their everyday lives outside of the four walls of your controlling organization, and watch the problems that they solve as parents, as family members, as friends and everything else, right? Watch how they solve those problems. Watch how creative they are once they understand the thing they are trying to do and have the freedom to be able to do those things. But what we need is context, right? So I think that great ideas come from a contextual space, right? So I need to understand what it is you're looking for. Otherwise, I'm just, you know, it's why why, if anyone ever tries to suggest that any of the work that I do is like just as just like a suggestion box online, it's another one of those things. I'm like, it's so far away from that, right? Because the problem with that is it's just asking people for ideas. That's got nothing to do with anything, right? Like the reason those things are so fundamentally flawed is you know, I ask you guys for ideas, you'll throw a load of them at me. Like, what happens next? Nothing, right? And so you need the context. Then you need to know that, and the reason, right? You've got to know it matters to somebody, right? Otherwise, what's the point of it again? So you need that sort of contextual validation of all of it. And then it needs permission, right? It needs permission and freedom to be creative, right? To think outside the box, to know that there's no wrong answer here, right? Like back to my point, we don't start assuming that people think, well, this is so blindingly obvious. It must already have put in there the vibrating rod, the X, Y, or Z, like million and one examples, the 50-year-old piece of research that surely nine months of amazing biologists and chemists would have been aware of because they've got access to everything under the sun in terms of data. No, there's no assumption of any of that, right? And so I think that cultural aspect is so critical to all of it, right? But fundamentally, it goes back to the point I have earlier, is I believe in the innate ability of people supported by technology to solve problems, right? And we are all problem solvers as a species, and we just got to find a way to tap into that.
That's awesome. I feel like a lot of times what gets in the way of ideas and creativity is that last element that you mentioned, Simon, freedom. I feel like a lot of times either managers or individual contributors and even CEOs might feel like they don't have the freedom enough to think outside the box, be creative. So, you know, how can we foster more freedom, I guess, in organizations internally,
I think freedom and fear are very, very closely related in this, mm-hmm. in this domain. Right. And I think that, fear, and you know, unfortunately, the job of many a CEO in large companies now has become a risk and compliance managerial role. Like it's right. it's not that they don't want to do the innovation work, not that they don't want to do this stuff, but it sits just on the side of their desk, on next to the reams and reams and reams of sort of governance, compliance, right. and risk management stuff that they So I was about to swear. I wasn't sure if I can swear on this thing or not, but
anything goes. Anything goes.
Yeah. Okay. Stuff that they have to work on, and so I think what we need to start doing is educating people and helping them to understand that the risk is coming from not adopting these ways of working, not by not doing them. Oh, sorry, like the risk is that if you don't do it, others can, right? And I'll give you a couple of sort of real world examples of that, right? So I ran a challenge recently for the CEO of a global leading pharmaceutical business, right? And they've got this real challenge with a specific blockbuster drug of theirs. But because of the nature of the challenge, they were terrified about what they could put into the public domain from an open innovation perspective in terms of data, right? So they tried to solve this, to understand why this issue was happening, the best minds in the world working on it, came to me and said, we think open innovation is a route to try and see whether we can, we've tried and we can't figure it out. Maybe the crowd can help us. However, we can't really give you any information other than what's public, which is less than 10% of the available data. And we said, well, let's try, right? Let's try. We spent a long time framing the challenge in this one, and put an award up. And within 30 days, the crowd did its magic, right? And was able to actually come up with a hypothesis that's sort of the leading hypothesis at this point in time. So why do I tell that story? Well, because the crowd did an amazing thing, but what the CEO suddenly came back to us with was like, holy shit, right? We were worried about the fact that if we put this data out there, there was a risk to the business, right? We were giving away something. It's like, either it's already out there or you don't need it to make the conclusions that we've been trying to need. And we've got to understand that the game has therefore changed, right? Like there is so what you thought was a risk turned out to not be a risk. You didn't even need it to make the evaluations that they were trying to make, right? And on the flip side of that is I work with a mid-cap engineering firm in the Midwest of the US, right? And they came to work with us because they've got big, big, big competitors, right? With many, many, many more thousands of employees. But what they get by working with us is an agility, right? So when they need to, they can turn on millions of people who can innovate on their behalf. And when they don't, they can scale back down again to their kind of lean battleship size and agility and scale. Now, if you think about that from a CEO of a 100,000 person Fortune 500 business, your mid-cap competitors can become bigger than you when they need to, and they can become leaner than you when they don't. And that's actually should be more scary to that CEO than, you know, can I afford to do this, or what's the risk around doing these things, right? Is that suddenly your disruptive businesses around you can turn on a crowd like never before, right? And that crowd is hugely impactful and hugely effective. And that changes the game of scale significantly, right? And so I think that's, you know, I don't know if that answers your question directly or not, but it's my general feeling on it is that open innovation, open talent is shifting the game. And actually, I think you'll see more agile businesses start to really, really compete with some of these large, huge organizations who are struggling to become agile. But if the C-suite, and this is not just the CEO, right? This is kind of board and C-suite across, needs to develop the skills of agile leadership, and to empower their organizations to turn this on. Because if they can turn it on, they have the power to not just transform their businesses, but really transform the world, because they got the money to do it, right? And they've got the reach to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's super fascinating to look at this as a force multiplier to allow organizations to punch above their weight and compete with R&D budgets of, you know, again, really much larger firms. I think that's a super interesting contextual element of all this. So Simon, in terms of just, if we think about what you know now versus what you know when you started with Zoku, how is being exposed to this many problems and new ideas and concepts, how has that changed your life outside of work?
Great question.
So I think it's a blessing and a curse to a degree, right? You know, I get to work on some of the world's big complex challenges, right? You know, we do a lot of work at the moment around sustainable innovation and climate. And, you know, I did a whole host of work as COVID kicked off with people around the world. And we gifted the platform to a number of sort of smaller NGOs and others to try and help. And I just heard that, you know, one of those pieces, you know, probably helped save the life of up to 80 million kids last year, right? Through some of the stuff that we enabled a group of philanthropists to do around the world. So there's lots of positive change and opportunity. And, you know, to get to work quite publicly and visibly on a number of these things is like, you know, it's enriching for us. It's enriching for the team. It's why, you know, we've got this kind of cool brand that does interesting stuff as a software business, but also like, you know, I feel like we're at this point of the iceberg, and there's so much more to reveal itself and so much more to do, right? And I think that this whole world might feel like it's been around for a long time, but we're just, I think, at the tipping point of realizing that, which is, you know, in part frustrating, because I kind of hoped we'd be further along, not just as a business, but as a community of innovators, as a community of change makers by now. But the global enterprise moves so slowly that you gotta be patient, right? And you gotta really develop a patience within it, because you can get very frustrated otherwise, right? The innate ability to look past how blindingly obvious this is as a force multiplier, as you said, and get lost in it. And the evidence is there, right? Like, that's the other piece, is like it's proven time and time and time again to be faster, to be more effective, and to be cheaper, right? There are not many things in our life that we choose not to do as people that are better, faster, and cheaper. Yet we keep looking past all of these things because we've been so ingrained in like this way of life. This is the way that things work. This is how businesses do. Businesses put up barriers. We create IP. We protect ourselves. We do all of these things. And I think that the short answer to all of it is, I think we're at a paradigm moment as a global society, that in 10 years time, we'll look back and this will all look quite different. And that's why I think we're at this tipping point for not just open innovation, but this whole concept of global talent, open distributed ways of working, the necessity for even competitors to co-create together, which was almost impossible even a couple of years ago in discussion, is now starting to really happen other than in very small circles, because of, you know, non-competing things like sustainability and others, is a quite transformative moment in time, I think.
Awesome, Simon. And I know we're coming up on time, so I'll want to close it off with, what would be your number one takeaway or advice, you know, to a CEO, to an executive, as they look to implement or foster this culture of collaboration and innovation within their organization?
So I think I would say two things. One is that the time is now to really reflect on your organization's needs and ability to build a future fit organization, right? I think that for many businesses, we've got away with being quite lackadaisical about change, but spend your time thinking and researching the art and understanding of exponential change. And we might realize that we're at one of those moments of true exponential change for many, many, many sectors and many, many businesses, right? And so the time for CEOs and for boards is to be bold and be willing to challenge the conventional model of what does talent look like? How do we drive change inside our organizations at scale, right? And not one big idea that delivers us a new product that might make money, but how do we make this a consistent, repeatable, scalable capability across every bit of our organization? Because if we can't, others will and will be irrelevant, right? And that's a material fact that I think is being borne out day by day across global organizations. So the summary might be, I think it's time to think different and be bold, but there's a lot of context wrapped in all of that.
Awesome, Simon. And awesome. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you? What's the best way to do that?
If anyone wants to reach out to me, you can find me. So look, our website's wazoku.com. If you want to find out more about the open challenges, which is always a fun place to start with stuff, I mentioned inoccentive.com. And you'll see me as a ever present on LinkedIn, right? I tend to exist there. So feel free to find me. I'm just Simon Hill on LinkedIn. So yeah, if you want to be constantly harangued with all things innovation from me, then feel free to connect with me on there.
Awesome. We'll make sure to add those to the show notes. Thanks so much for coming and educating us on innovation and how we can leverage a culture of innovation for ourselves and our organizations.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Thanks a lot, Simon.
Cheers.
Cheers.